I've read earlier in the summer, at least parts of it, at meal settings or sometime, and it probably always hasn't received a favorable comment, I don't know. But I always look forward to the time when I could share it with, when we had more retired people here, because this is really what it's speaking about, although it has more general implications too. It's written by a fellow that is a doctor, also has his doctorate in some other area too. I don't know if it's education or what, doesn't say. It's called Passing on the Torch. It's not, it's only about 5 pages. And maybe you can comment or interrupt along the line of reading it. I'll just read through it. I think it has a lot of value in just as it sits, but then I like to read into it something else as well, being involved with Holden, that I guess I'll have to admit before I'd even start reading that I see what he's proposing here, a possibility of this being at Holden. So I'd appreciate comments about that as well as about the article if you agree or disagree with that. So the fellow that's written it, his name is Halbert Dunn, and it's called Passing on the Torch. As we move along the path of active, purposeful living, a deep desire comes to us in our older years to pass on the knowledge, experience, and wisdom attained during our lifetime to others, to our children, friends, colleagues, and fellow man. The enrichment of human culture through passing on the torch to others makes us feel that our life has been worth living. Most of us bequeath our material possessions to those we love. Sometimes the urge is expressed on a broader basis. Thus, the great foundations have been created and much effort simulated toward social good. The prime of life for the body physically is in the early 20s. From then on, deterioration sets in. At first, this is hardly perceptible, and usually we do not consider ourselves as growing old during the adult years. One all-important fact stands out, namely that while the body is deteriorating, the mind and spirit of the individual can keep on growing. All of us have physical limitations, but in the older years, we have more of them, and they become more severe. Consequently, one of the things that must be learned in coping with increased physical limitations is to transfer a considerable portion of our interests in the older years from the more active physical occupations and pleasures of earlier life into the still greater joys which can come with full activation of mind and spirit. I guess if I have one criticism of this article, it is that I would like to hear him play up the physical side of it more. Regardless of the age of a person, I think we have to admit that as we do get older, that certainly there are limitations physically, but I don't think we have to play that down and pretend that we can't do anything, you know, as whether we're beyond, supposedly I'm even beyond the prime. Some say for a man the prime is 18 or at least in the early 20s, but I don't think we should have to play down that what can be done. It's true that maybe what we've done in our younger years hasn't been up to what we could have done then either, but that we can still be doing things physically and developing things that maybe we've never done before. Maybe if we haven't in our younger years had time to cultivate leisure time activities, whether it's golf or something else, that this is still a possibility and that we don't have to exclude the physical. And I think this is one criticism that I would have of his article, that he is kind of setting the physical aside. Unless a person continues to grow after retirement, he cannot sustain the blows to personal dignity, reorient his values, and reintegrate his living patterns around mental and spiritual satisfactions. The older years become, therefore, a time for continued learning, for continued discovery of oneself through creative expression, and for finding continued discovery of emotional security through through the practice of altruism or giving to others. Learning is open to the older person through continuing education, lectureships and seminars, cultural programs, reading, and keeping abreast of today's problems. Those values which involve wisdom, character, and dedication to purpose are passed on to the following generation through example. Not infrequently, they represent the greatest contribution of all to the human race. A man born of humble stock and reared a carpenter has profoundly influenced society for 2,000 years. His penetrating observations on the nature of man have never been matched. A Da Vinci, a Francis Bacon, a Lincoln, an Einstein, who can measure the extent of their contributions to humanity? The torches of their lives, still burning brightly, have penetrated far into the future and will long help mankind to reach the potential of which humanity is capable. This talk today deals with five aspects of how you and this auditorium may find it possible to pass on the torch of your life to other people through five ways. One, continued learning. Two, creative expression. Three, service to others and participation in the ongoing world. Four, enhancement of the human culture. And last, revitalization of neighborhood living. And then he takes these five aspects and talks about each one. Number one is continued learning. I do not need to dwell on the value of continuing education to this audience. In my opinion, the Institute of Lifetime Learning of the American Association of Retired Persons and National Retired Teachers Associations, to which all of you have been exposed. This was a talk that was given to a particular audience with this background. It is among the most rewarding and exciting efforts in adult education for older people now in operation in the United States. This is the fourth year of its activity. Permit me to borrow from comments concerning the Institute made by its director. All the classes of the Institute are conducted at college level. The instructors and professors are drawn from nearby universities. The teachers are unanimous in the opinion that these classes are more challenging than those which they teach on the campus because the students are seeking knowledge without concern for grades, credits, or degrees. The curriculum now offers 66 subjects and is grouped into four major areas: 1, creative maturity; 2, world affairs; 3, personal development; and 4, languages. Creative maturity includes such subjects as art, music appreciation, creative writing, and literature. World affairs includes both current events and modern history. Personal development embraces psychology, philosophy, home arts, business refresher courses, and successful living programs. Language classes are held in French, German, Spanish for beginners and advanced students. Students that have taken at least one course over the past 3 years number in the thousands. In Prince George's County, Maryland, adjacent to the Washington metropolitan area, we are so impressed with the success and potentials of the Institute that we are now attempting to work out a project under joint sponsorship of the Association, the University of Maryland, and the Commission on Aging to see how the Institute might be carried to various localities in the county in a decentralized manner. If this can be worked out without lowering the quality of the curriculum, perhaps a formula can be developed to broaden the potentialities of the Institute. Reactions to the Institute testify to its value, and he quotes some of these. A quotation: families call or write to say what the education and new information has meant to the whole family, not just the older member. Another one: doctors are recommending the Institute for men and women who are seriously challenged by boredom or loss of contacts with people and events. And another, most revealing, is the reaction by older persons themselves Many have said they could not imagine what retirement would have done to them if they had not discovered the pleasure and therapy of continuing education. Then he moves on to a second area, and that was creative expression. Probably no value is so important to the attainment of self-fulfillment during the older years as the expression of one's own creativity. Of course, this value is important to all periods of life, since uniqueness is a part of our innermost being, and creative expression is the outlet for this uniqueness, a balance to social forces requiring conformity. During childhood, adolescence, and the younger adult years, other types of expression substitute, in part, for a lack of creative expression. Approval of parents, teachers, and one's peers customarily suffices for children and teenagers. Success in work and achievements and status are usually sufficient for the more active adult years. After retirement, however, these props to the ego are removed. Creative expression takes a more important place. This is why the creative maturity subjects in the Institute of Lifetime Learning are so overwhelmingly popular among the registrants. Perhaps one of the most useful activities that older persons could undertake would be that of helping in the struggle to raise creative expression as a value in our society. I think creative expression ought to be moved high up on the national scale of values. We need to find a way to enhance the importance of such values to our children. Perhaps we should give awards and scholarships for creative expression in youth. If such interests are rooted early in life, they will grow and become purposeful elements in adult life and during the older years. The retirement years bring time back into living, and time is precious to the person who has developed an outlet for creative expression earlier in life. Then his third area, service to others and participation. Retirement usually ushers in the opportunity to participate in the affairs of life on one's own terms. With an abundance of free time and release from the responsibilities of family, rearing, and work obligations, with reasonably good health, and with an assured income sufficient for modest living needs, the older person can devote himself to those activities which appeal to him as being most interesting and worthwhile. His services no longer need to be sold to the highest bidder so as to satisfy the requirements of family and position. Service to others or to a cause can be given freely. This type of service is called altruism, or giving to others. It can be rendered in many forms, to individuals and families, to social or religious groups, to the community in which one lives, to children and youth, to the schools, to the sick, disabled, and friends needing help, or to the broad social and cultural needs of our nation and our world. Altruism, giving to others, is an expression of love. Love is an important ingredient of the healthy person, whether he is infant, child, teenager, adult, or retired. Mother love encompasses the infant. An indulgent family encircles the child and guides the teenager, and sexual love between a man and woman establishes a firm biological basis for the family throughout the more active adult years. During the older years, however, loneliness usually sets in. Loved ones die one by one. The loss of one's mate is a crushing blow, calling for much inner strength and courage to survive and to carry on. The best way toward the dynamic maturity of older years under such conditions is to move in ever-widening circles from family love outward toward the all-embracing love of the brotherhood of man. This is the best antidote to the loneliness which otherwise may be the oldster's lot. A major outlet of service by which older persons can make a worthwhile contribution to modern society is through establishing bonds of companionship with children and youth. Admittedly, the urban society of our times makes this difficult to achieve. Today's typical family has fewer children than the rural family of a century ago, and it is usually limited to two generations, parents and minor children. The parents and children live apart from other kin and keep in touch by mail and visits. Grandpa and grandma are no longer around so that the children can be with them in a casual, everyday relationship. At present, our children are growing almost hostile to the aged. We need to change this trend because one of the truly great human resources that we are now wasting is the maturity of the older person, in particular, those who have retired after having lived rich, full lives. They have a wealth of experience, knowledge, and wisdom that could and should be passed on to youngsters. Maturity and youth are two poles of life which attract each other. The immature minds, eager and emerging, need the challenge and stimulus of mature minds. Perhaps if we work at the problem, we can find an alternative pattern of living within the community which will restore this relationship. Many children are mentally retarded or deprived of a normal home life. Mental retardation accounts for approximately 4% of the babies born each year in the United States, an estimated number of about 6 million in the entire country. Mental retardation is not a disease. It is an impairment in which normal mental development has been slowed or stopped. Much can be done for the milder cases of mental retardation if there is early diagnosis and if steps are taken to bring such children the ingredients which are lacking in their lives. All need love, understanding, and assistance. All need a chance to grow and develop to the degree of which they are capable. Bowlby, in his classic monograph for the World Health Organization, states this: the proper care of children deprived of a normal home life can now be seen to be not merely an act of common humanity, but to be essential for the mental and social welfare of a community. For when their care is neglected, as happens in every country of the Western world today, they grow up to reproduce themselves. Deprived children, whether in their own homes or out of them, are a source of social infection as real and serious as are carriers of diphtheria and typhoid. And just as preventive measures have reduced these diseases to negligible proportions, so can determined action greatly reduce the number of deprived children in our midst and the growth of adults liable to produce more of them. There are many ways for encouraging companionship between older persons and youngsters. The 4-H clubs, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, and the Big Brother movement come to mind as highly successful and stable organizations fulfilling this function in part. Sometimes youth takes the initiative. For example, on September 20th of this year, 20 Girl Scouts from the Brentwood Girl Scout Cadet Troop legally adopted 25 members of the Brentwood Senior Citizens Club. A decree of adoption specified that the said troop and the said adoptees do from this day henceforth accept the responsibility of helping one another in both menial and difficult tasks and of promoting better understanding between the two generations. The Foster Grandparent Program of the Office of Economic Opportunity comes to mind also as generating the type of program which is needed. Under this program, low-income persons over 60 are recruited, trained, and employed to serve neglected and deprived children residing in institutions, children who lack close personal relationships with adults. The giving of tender, loving care on a regular basis to children deprived of affection and attention is a magic tonic for the child as well as for the older person. This program is proving to be outstandingly successful. Another program aimed at breaking down barriers between the old and the young has been carried on for several years at Winnetka, Illinois. The Senior Center of Winnetka is asking retired and soon-to-be-retired persons with special knowledge and skills to work with children who are not living up to their intellectual capacity in school. Each adult is given two children with whom to spend 40 minutes, mind you, a week throughout the school year. Together, the three develop a project along the line of the adult specialty and fit it into the school's curriculum. Since the school integrates the project into its program, anything the child accomplishes on his project gives him status in school. Since his family also is brought into a sympathetic alliance, he is encouraged and supported at home. Then number four, the enhancement of the human culture. The value of a human being to the culture which has sheltered and reared him throughout life will be judged ultimately in accordance with his net worth to society. Has he given to his culture and to humanity a little more than what he cost? Was his life worth living? Did he squander the birthright which was his and passed on a lessened inheritance to his children and his children's children? Older persons in our society might well take on the task of promoting cultural enhancement as a value vital to society. All of us are born with both a biological and cultural inheritance. We accept the cultural heritage as a matter of course, even though it was produced laboriously at great cost by those who lived before us. If we are worth our salt, we must contribute our bit to this heritage before we die. This is a value that could be taught. Since the teaching involves learning by example, we who have attained a measure of maturity must guide the ones who follow us by examples we set. In the United States, we inherit a very special and cherished type of human culture, containing within it the tradition of human freedom and of creative endeavor by the individual. Even with its admitted faults, we can be proud of our culture. But its possession means that we have an extraordinary responsibility to develop this culture into something which represents the best of mankind's aspirations in terms of human values. And then the last, the fifth method, the revitalization of neighborhood living. Perhaps the greatest single opportunity for social usefulness which is open to the older person is participation and assumption of a leadership role in revitalization of neighborhood living. That there is a desperate need for this is apparent from many symptoms of social sickness. The mounting rates of delinquency and crime, increasing breakdown in physical and mental health, and deterioration of the family structure, so essential for both individual and social health. The friendly, concerned neighborhood, traditional to the early days of this country, in which people knew and trusted each other as neighbors and worked together on common problems and interests, has almost vanished under the impact of the sprawling, industrialized urban condition in which most of us are living. Violence stalks our streets. Apathy to these conditions and self-interest rather than concern for the general welfare are commonplace. Yet nothing short of the citizen's involvement in the affairs of his community holds forth the promise of prevention and cure for such conditions. While all of us must become involved in revitalizing our own neighborhoods, it is my view that community betterment holds forth a bigger challenge to older persons than to any other age group. The older person needs to find ways of becoming socially useful during retirement, Moreover, he has more free time to give to such a purpose than do other people. Due to physical limitations, he is frequently confined to the neighborhood in which he lives. Those who undertake leadership and the task of community revitalization will earn the gratitude of their neighbors and of society generally. In principle, the process of doing this is simple. To know the neighbors personally and encourage them to meet together regularly so as to learn and work together on problems and develop common interests. The community is where the older person can take an active part in the improvement of society and the never-ending struggle to improve environmental health, to conserve natural resources and beauty, and achieve values within our society which will challenge the individual to strive toward a higher level of the potential of which he is capable. And then his conclusion, the urge to pass on the torch of our life comes to all of us who live on into the later years. In the process of doing this, the individual can experience self-fulfillment and attain the fullest potential of which he is capable. 5 major pathways to accomplish this end have been discussed. Continued learning, creative expression, service to others and participation, enhancement of the human culture, and revitalizing of the neighborhood in which we live. The neighborhood in which we live is where most of us must do what we can for others. Here is where we can best pass on the torch of our life to younger hands. So, that's it.
Very good.
What do you think?
Very good.
I think it has general implications beyond just retired. And, you know, this is obviously what he's talking about, but there's so much in there that can be, you know, general for any age. And if this type of atmosphere of involvement in the neighborhood, concern for human values and culture, and this would be started earlier, well then so much the better for the retired years, you know.
I think Dorothy Carroll is a good example of it.
That's right. That's right. She isn't here right now. She's probably working. In fact, I know she is. I just talked to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's up and going, doing something, and all the time. Well, for my own self, I know I have found much more time and much more interest in working and doing for others since I retired, which isn't quite 3 years, but I'm like my children tell me I'm busier now than when I was working.
Yeah, this is what gets me. You know, we call it retired, whatever that means, and I know in the case of my father and mother and my father-in-law is retired also, that they're as active now, if not more active, you know, than other times. And I've been impressed by this up here just this fall with the retired people that have been here already and those that are coming now and still will be coming, that, you know, we talk so much about the freedom and the spontaneity of youth and their mobility and everything, but at least in the sessions, now maybe this is because the youth respond in the way they think we expect them to, you know, as far as being more reserved and not wanting to have some fun and to, you know, do things, but that the retired people, the older people up here, are the ones that are really ready to go and do things and really let loose and laugh a little and have some fun. It's been an experience to deal with the people throughout the summer, and, you know, and see the different, we have older people throughout the summer and younger people, and it's mixed now to some extent, but obviously because of school and things, it's more to the retired now. But it's interesting to watch this with the age groups, how they react to Holden Village. You know. One group that was just here 2 weeks ago was the faculty from Pacific Lutheran University in Tacoma. Basically, a pretty young group of people. a couple of people there were classmates of mine at Gustavus, and so they're still in their 20s, their late 20s. And I suppose there aren't too many on the faculty that would be under 28, 26 anyway, if you figure their college years plus graduate work or whatever. And upwards, I suppose, some close to retirement. But for the most part, they're in the later 30, 40 bracket. And maybe it was somewhat because of the program that was set up for these people when they came in through their own school. They had their own program here. But these people were very tied up, you know. But I guess it's because they're still under the pressures of their profession. And it's too bad that we can't relax within that even, you know. But this business about talking about the retired and the older, it's really, my amazement has been how active, you know, people are, and specifically in my case of knowing what my parents and my father-in-law do as now retired people.
I think that one thing that he perhaps didn't bring out in that was that an older retired, you could say, person needs to be a good listener. I mean, the younger people don't want to be advised or told. I mean, I didn't want to be that age either. You have to learn things for yourself. But oftentimes, if you're a good listener, then they will talk easier to you than as if you're going out rather than receiving.
Or by example, maybe, as he mentions.
I just retired this June, so this is very interesting. What did you think of joining the VISTA? I thought maybe writing to that. I haven't, since I said I've just been a couple months out yet.
I'm not.
Anyone tried anything like that, for instance?
Yes, I wrote to VISTA and got a lot of information.
Well, that's what I haven't written yet, but someone thought that was.
I don't recall. I've seen their literature and looked at it. I can't recall what their program is.
Well, if you're going to have to what you can give
volunteer.
Them of what your and you only have to be in there a year for the Peace Corps takes two. And many couples are going into that, husband and wife together or single people. And you can write and tell them your experience and what you can do. And they'll very often fit you into something. And you don't have to leave the United States for that either.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at Peace Corps, most of that
you can get to do. Do you think it's good when you get the literature?
I find for a woman that, and I spent last year, it's a very interesting thing to be a house mother. It's colleges.
Oh.
And I was at the Washington State University last year. And it gives you a great experience with, you come out of there realizing that the young are marvelous.
And that's the senior citizen position,
something like that? No, you just go as a higher youth or employees. And that's a great location for particularly those who need a home and who enjoy spending some time with the young.
Is there an age limit on it?
Well, I don't think there is. If you have the right ability, they'll consider you. Oh no, they're not particularly an age limit. I suppose they would be if you really were, you know, old, but at your age it wouldn't be an age limit.
Well, as I understand, VISTA is under the Office of Economic Opportunity,
yeah,
if I understand right.
Volunteers and Service to America.
No, that's Volunteers and Service to America. Now that's across age. There's
no
right. Minimum there.
Even Peace Corps is for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now this thing that he mentioned here, this foster grandparent program, is also part of the Office of Economic Opportunity. And I've seen literature on this. In fact, I think I may even have it up here with me. I'm not sure. I guess sometimes I'm a little suspicious of some government things, because you know what they always can develop into, so much paperwork and bureaucracy to it, you know. But this doesn't mean there can't be some real value in it. But maybe a person doesn't always have to get involved in a specific large program like that either. Maybe it can be something like this, or something within the local neighborhood that's at an easier thing to get into.
Yeah,
There are lots of volunteer work to do, that's for sure, in our own place where we live.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, they pay you to use me like $75 a week or something.
Yeah, that sounds a little more like it.
There's one service that retired people can take part, and it isn't only for retired people, it's for any man or woman for the time. And that is Traveler's Aid, that's in the large cities, the river people or the bus people or the airport. And most of that's the help is most, but like how Holden, all volunteer, practically all volunteer. And they're mostly women. And it's very interesting.
Where do you go to find out about that?
Well, where do you live?
San Diego.
San Diego. Well, just go down to the, I'm not sure that they may not have the train depots anymore because there's not so much traffic. But inquire at the bus depot, see if there's a Traveler's Aid booth there. And I'm pretty sure there might be one at the airport. And you can give as much time as you want.
That sounds interesting.
I think other ways of finding out things are through some of these retirement magazines, like I think I just noticed a copy over here someplace on Modern Maturity is one. I think there's another one. I don't know. I don't remember. Is this the one that's the...
That's the one you're reading about. American Association of Retired People.
Yeah, that's their organ, huh? Yeah, there's another one, too, that I think there's a National Association of Retired People. And they have another magazine that's titled something else.
There's one, corollary in it, and that's the retired teachers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's another one. He mentions that one here. So some of these magazines, in fact, this one, we're just in the process now of getting an article done up on Holden for this Modern Maturity. Hopefully that they will publish that.
That'd be an excellent thing because nothing is Modern Maturity for the Northwest, anywhere near
right?
The Northwest.
Oh, good.
Only in Washington,
we'll get a good
Florida, and Southern California. Yeah,
we have
a
what?
What
did you say?
Modern Maturity people, the AARP, only have these lifetime classes and that sort of thing. Only in Southern California, in Florida, and in Washington, D.C. Nothing up here Pacific Northwest, so maybe this will start something up here.
That'd be good.
Because we need classes of that sort up here, but there's, in a small town, there's nothing available to you.
Mm-hmm. I can't help but, because my interest is quite a bit with Holden, but read into this, you know, what things he's saying and read in that about Holden and some of the things that we try to do here for all ages, moving people into try to being creative and to realize that they have creative potential in them, whether it's in ceramics or painting or whatever, that if they just try it, you know, that, I mean, for all ages. And we had one gal in the faculty this summer that came up to work in painting, and she had some of the littlest tykes and teenagers and older people out here on the lawn working with oil painting, and it was fabulous, you know. Some of it wasn't so good, but, you know, how do you learn? But there have been people up here that have developed and found out they can paint and do many things that they never dreamt, you know, they had the potential, because they never tried it. You know, it's this deal, that once again, of risking, you know, let's just try it, and if you fail, well, fine, you at least tried it. You know, better to try and fail than not to try at all. But I'm just in the process. I just was going to answer a letter that we got the other day from a pastor here in nearby. People from his congregation had been here this summer, and they had expressed to him, you know, they'd enjoyed the village, and for the most part had a good experience here, with one exception. They had teenage children with them, and they suggested that we should have a teenage program up here. Well, when I write to them, I'm going to say, well, admittedly, we don't have a teenage program. And this isn't by omission, this is on purpose. But our feeling is that, especially in our churches, but in so much of our society, we divide everything up. you know, into ages. See, our churches have, I talked to my home pastor one day, and I said, well, how are things going? And he said, well, our high league group is pretty good. The single young adults group is, well, it's waning, but it's starting to pick up. The married young adults could be better. And, you know, on and on he went, you see. Everything, all he thought of was groups, you see, where he's grouped to death. He didn't see people, he saw groups. He comes into a room, and all he saw was groups, you know. Well, now this week, you know, 4 o'clock Saturday night, we're going to have this group meeting, you know. And I think maybe if at one time in the year anyway, we can leave the family together when they come to Holden, well, that's, I think, good. And we've discovered that in programming here, there was a time when we had a time of the summer, two or three weeks, that was just for young adults, single young adults. Well, the good thing about it was that they had a common problem. Most of them were, 22, 25 to mid-30s maybe. They were living in a city situation, away probably from their original home. They're trying to find friends in a large town. They're busy working, and they're lonely. This is their common problem. And this brings them together, unites them, and this is fine. But then the problem is that whatever session you have with them, they always come back to the same thing, you know, to their same problem. They start to indwell, and the problem that they do share gets so large, you know, that they don't get any place else. And so better to have a retired person back here in the corner and a teenager over here and a young couple over there and somebody with children over there, you know, and then you start tossing this thing around. And so whatever they're talking about, instead of always centering back to this loneliness and trying to find a mate or whatever, the older person can say, well, you know, now, when I was, you know, younger, see? And then this person can help this teenager, you know, and that teenager can add a little idealism maybe to the tone of the older person, and he can add his maturity and experience to that person. And so we've got this thing going across the room, you know, and this is a healthy experience because this is the way life is. We don't deal just with our own age group. And this is this thing about passing on the torch of sharing, you know, our experiences and our ideas. So, like I say, when I write to this fellow, I say, you know, admittedly, we don't have that. This disturbs a lot of people because they're used to a stereotyped youth program where they would come up and we'd have groups, youth group discussions or whatever. And they kind of overlook the fact that when our summer is going and when we have more youth here because they're out of school, that we do have, the young teenagers do stop in for lectures. Not all of them do because they're tired of sitting in school, so they don't like to hear someone talk. Excuse me, but those that do, I think, get a lot out of it. Some of them participate to a great deal to the point that we know that we have to have them here. We know that we can't have too many of them here, because then they have their own community, you see. So we have to have a broad cross-section of people and ages. But they can add a lot, and sometimes I think we insult their intelligence or their potential by saying that we have to tone down our theology or whatever we're talking about to reach them. You know, why not give them something here to grab for? You know, so they can go beyond themselves and to reach for something, see? Well, we do have a youth, some things for children under the teenage years, because obviously they can't be in at least our sessions. Everything else we're all mixed together in. They're in ceramics and so are other people. But obviously in the lectures and things, they aren't going to be getting anything out of it, whereas the teenagers can. But this is, I think, some of the things here that Holden tries to do, not only for the retired, but for all ages, to move people into these things before they become retired, to enjoy some of this right along, to create, for one thing, leisure time activities when we're very quickly approaching a day when our leisure time is getting to be quite great. And so we have to to cultivate something, some worthwhile activities. A brother of mine, talking to him at Christmas time, we just adopted a little girl at Christmas. And my brother had always said, and my whole family, I guess, because I'm the youngest, well, wait until you're married, you know. Or then when I got married, they said, wait until you have children. And then, you know, something's going to change. When we first got married, we would be, one time we just took off one weekend and we drove to Florida over Easter. And we just decided to do that, and we did it. Then he said, well, now wait till you have children. Well, now we had a daughter, and he said, well, now wait until you have two. Or more than one, you see. And then they say, wait until they're older, you know. Well, I'm getting a little tired of waiting, really. But he said, well, now your life is going to change, see. I said, well, I don't know. Is it really, you know? Is my life really going to change because we have a child, or now we have two? I think it's true. Our schedule is going to change. We have to either be home or provide a babysitter, you know, or at the time I was in school and I'd have to get home in the afternoon and I'd pick her up from the babysitter and bring her home and take care of her in the afternoon and all these things. That changes. That's obvious. But my whole life isn't my schedule. And I think, in the case of my brother that was talking to me, for him, his life is his schedule, to at least to a certain extent. Getting the house, you know, getting to work, getting back, and that is really what amounts to him for life. So that, you know, this is what is true, what he said. But then, and I think this has been partially true for my father, but then you say, if your life is really your schedule and your work, what happens when you take the work away? Then what's left? You see? If your whole life has been your work, and the work has gone because you wanted to leave it, or you were forced into retirement, or whatever, then what is left after that? If you haven't cultivated something along the way to take care of your leisure time, to make life something more than just work. This is easier for someone like myself to say, having not lived through economic insecurity that my father, for instance, has gone through, where he had to work, coming over from Norway, having to go right to work just to scrape up a living during hard times, then going through a time when my mother died and he had to kind of be both parents and get the job, you know, have his job and the whole thing. So it was hard, you know, but it isn't ended for him yet. At 73, he can still learn, you know, to use his time, and he's doing this.
What
did he do? Right now, first of all, he was a construction superintendent or a carpenter at one time, so he has this thing to do somewhat, you know. But of course, even there's only so much you can do to your house, you know. He can only paint it so many times a year. And then you run out, you know, you paint the basement and you paint the walls and then you run out of things to paint. But he does a lot of work. The church he belongs to is right across the alley, so he does get over there and do a lot of repair work, carpenter work and things around there. I just got a letter from my parents yesterday, and they're running a daycare service for children at the church to use the building during the week, which is, here again, another subject, but an interesting thing to use our buildings during the week. But anyway, he's helping out with that thing somehow or other. And so does my mother along some of these same things with that. They belong to a number of different organizations, from Sons of Norway Lodges to the Carpenters Auxiliary type thing, and a lot of this. So they do keep busy, plus traveling. And involvement in a neighborhood organization, involvement on the church council,
things like that. A neighborhood
organization? Well, in this particular,
they live in a large city, where they
yes,
live,
yeah, they call it the they have a particular name for the Phillips Neighborhood Improvement Organization. It's an area that's changing quickly economically, with highways coming through, this sort of thing. So the homeowners, basically, is what it amounts to, and they've met to try to see what they can do to keep the community looking good you know, and having a voice in City Hall. Yeah. So there are these possibilities.
Well, then there's always a window down the street that needs their gutter fixture, down top put on.
That's right.
You get so involved that you have to hire help to take care
of
it.
I guess I would rather see that type of thing than maybe involvement. And here again, I don't mean to cast a bad light on the government programs, because they're very worthy, many of them. But I guess I would rather see that type of thing on our own neighborhood block. You know, how many of us in our home neighborhoods, how many of us know all the people that live on our block? You know, can you name all the people that live on the same block you do, or across the street? You see, this is interesting. It's because we are a mobile people. We can drive and get places. But here again, it's this business of helping is sometimes very easy if we don't know who we're helping. If we put $5 in the collection plate, or $5 in an envelope that someone comes to the door and they say, well, no, this is to help children in India, or you know, who knows what, somebody even in your town, but it's a depersonalized thing, you don't know them. That's very easy, you know. But can we help the guy that lives across the street? Or the guy that lives next door? The personal one. Carol Hinderly has a little excerpt, a little statement in the calendar, I don't know which month it is, where it says that you cannot help anyone who cannot hurt you. And I think that's very true.
I understand that.
Well, it's that it's very easy to help someone that you don't even know, you see. For instance, I happen to have a brother that is an alcoholic. And I can't get any support or help for him from within my family. From my brothers and sisters, from my folks, yes, but not from my brothers and sisters. But at the same time, they're willing, I think, if someone came to their door to solicit funds for alcoholics, they would probably give them $10. But they wouldn't give my brother a dollar, you see, because they're afraid he's going to blow that dollar on liquor. Well, so might the other guy blow the 10, you know, but they're not going to know that. And they realize that, you see. And so I think unless we know that we're going to have to sacrifice and, you know, take the chance, take the risk of failing in helping someone, you see, maybe it isn't really help. You know, we're just giving it impersonally to someone else. Another example, a seminary that I went to had a pastor from Nigeria. He had completed education over there. He was here for more work. And he joined the church that I was going to at the time, and that church decided to raise money for him to bring his family over to America. And so they had an ice cream social on a donation basis. You get the ice cream and you give what you want. No charge. And they had the social, and as it turns out, that this was a black person, of course, as it turns out, that night of the ice cream social, some children from down the block in the same neighborhood where my parents were, some of which were black, some were Indian, and some were white, came into the church and got an ice cream cone. And of course, they didn't pay. Well, this caused quite a bit of confusion for these people that were putting on this ice cream social. You see, these children didn't pay. But the fact was that maybe these children hadn't had ice cream for a week or a month, I don't know. But anyway, these were children that were from poor families that didn't have ice cream, I don't think. But even if they did, at least they got some now. Well, anyway, they did get quite excited. They did raise $1,500 that night. But yet one of their main concerns was that they lost, you know, a nickel's worth of ice cream to this black child. So we're willing to give $1,500 to a black man that we know is going to go away. He's going to go back to Nigeria. We know that. You see, he doesn't live here now. He's going to go back and he's not going to bother us. So it was a thing that they could very easily settle their conscience. You know, they said, well, you know, it's a flag-waving thing. Look what we did for the black people. We raised $1,500 for this man. But the little boy that lives down the street or next door to the church, we wouldn't give 5 cents to. It's a funny thing, because that person can hurt us, you see. That is the same little black boy that probably threw a stone through my dad's garage window, maybe. You know, but he can hurt us, see. He can also love us, and we can also love him. But can we love someone that we don't even see, that we give money to but we never see them? And in terms of Holden, in the support of Holden Village, which, as you probably know, the church support has decreased to just something over $5,000. This doesn't come very close to solving the $90,000 approximate deficit after registration costs take care of about half of the cost of the village. The village, it takes about $190,000 to run the village. About half of that, registration and money made in the store, takes care of about half of that cost. So let's say it takes care of $100,000. That leaves $90,000. While the church, as a body, throws in $5,300 next year. So that means the money has to come from somewhere. Personally, I think that this is a good thing. I think there's a danger when a large institution or something gives money to a place that the place doesn't die soon enough. If Holden is doing what it professes to do for the church, for individuals, for society, the people that come here will see this. They will feel it themselves. They will see what it's doing. And then if they can, they will help support it either by coming here, by participating, by working, or by giving money. If the place isn't doing what it professes to do, people are going to see that right now. And the money is going to stop right now. If the money was coming from some outside depersonalized thing, you know, we might keep going for 2 more years. See, after we've quit doing the job. And so I guess this is, you know, I don't know if I've gotten this across, but that it, you can't help someone unless they can hurt you. You know, and I think we have a whole lot of helping going on where there is no possibility of anyone being hurt. And I think the other thing that maybe should be added to that statement is that you cannot help anyone who cannot love you, you see, or whom you cannot love. And it's pretty hard to love someone that you can't see. Just like it's very hard for them to hurt you because they don't know who you are. The money just comes from a depersonalized thing. This doesn't mean, of course, that all of that is evil, or evil or even bad, because we have to have that type of thing too. But I hope along the line that we can have personalized help in giving.
Do you think that, as for my own self, living out west, I hadn't even heard of Holden Village. I don't think went over to you maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Never heard of it until this last spring.
Yeah, this is a peculiar thing.
The churches hadn't, and I didn't hear it through that. Mr. Doring showed some pictures, but I mean, my church didn't.
The village has spent a lot of money, even thousands of dollars, in promotion, in sending out literature to churches, to pastors. Then in going around and asking, we discover that pastors don't know anything about it. And in so many instances, what has happened is that their secretary has made a file folder called Holden Village. And when anything comes, she puts it in there. So the church has a file on Holden Village. And I would guess that each one of your churches has one. The chances are pretty good. But no one knows about it because it goes in the file.
Our churches didn't hear about it this year.
Yeah. I worked as a youth director in Minneapolis 1 year, and I received a brochure on Holden Village. At that time, it was the brown one. And I can't remember if I read the whole thing or not. I don't think I did. And I can't remember if I saw that it was in Washington and decided that it was too far, you know, being in Minnesota or what. I don't know if I even got that far. But I remember I put it in a file. Then we were on a vacation up northern Minnesota just for a weekend. and we stopped at a church, and on the bulletin board there was the same brochure from Holden Village, and we read it there. And my wife noticed that you could work as a volunteer, you know, and I said, well, what kind of deal is that? You know, you don't, all from my years, summers, and even when I was in high school, all the way through college, I worked in construction as a carpenter. You know, I had to get money for college, and you worked, you see. I mean, this was the way my father felt, and so this was my thing. You didn't give a summer away, you know. Well, we decided to do it, and so we got out here 2 years ago. But, you know, this is a funny thing. See, I had gotten the brochure mailed to me, and I'd never even read it, you know. So the best publicity and promotion for Holden is the people that have been here. And this, of course, is the most consistent with the way the village is anyway. If the village is really the interaction of people of all ages and stuff, well, then maybe the best way to promote it is by these people doing the job. We say that everyone that comes here is the owner. Well, this is part of the promotion too. Someone comes back and they say, gee, where have you been? And, well, I've been up to Holden. Well, what's that? You know? So then there you go. There are different things that we try to do. Just last week we had planning sessions here with the people from Seattle and Spokane, well, from all of Washington actually, deciding on banquets and things for the year. They have had these in Minneapolis and in Rock Island, Illinois, and up in this area, banquets. But we discovered that banquets really aren't Holden Village. You know, everyone comes dressed up. And we try to sing the songs that we use at supper, and they don't work. And it's a different thing. Everyone's dressed up, and, you know, who's dressed up at Holden, you see? And it's just a different deal. And we get a lot of people coming to banquets that never come to Holden. And that isn't all bad if there's a type of a ministry there. This is the way I look at promotion. I'll be going out this weekend and different times throughout the winter on so-called promotion. I'm real anxious to do that. I like the idea of being up here for the winter, but more so I like the idea of getting out and being places with people. If we can work with people, and my idea of going around then isn't just to show slides or try to show how beautiful it is or whatever, but if we can work with people as we go around and do some of the things that we try to do here to help one another, to minister unto one another, and encourage one another, inspire one another to get into different types of things, to work with one another, to help their churches. If we can go out and do that and the people never come, well, maybe that's all right. And then maybe we'll just get rid of the village and just do that. I don't know. You know, but if then, seeing that that can be a good and fruitful thing and could even be better on a week basis or, you know, for a group or something, and so then they do come up here, well, then fine. Then we've promoted in a sense. You know, I don't even like to use that word. A promotion and public relations has such a bad taste, you know, because of what type of public relations work does go on through corporations and things. But to me, this is the promotion of Holden. And so instead of large banquets and things like this, we like to have people just have their friends over. So when you go back, you have some friends in. Maybe purposely for that, maybe they're just happen to be over anyway, for a sewing circle. And, you know, not that you connived to do this, but it happens to come up that you talk about home. So then they find out. Or if someone wants to purposely do this and have a meeting, a cottage meeting or something of that type in a home, invite some friends in. And say, well, you know, we've been there, and boy, it meant a lot to us, and we'd like to see you go. Then this is promotion of Holden, you see. Better that type of thing than to have someone of us here come out and talk to a large group. You know, we love to do that, but even at that point, we would rather go out. Well, for instance, in November, I'll be going for a month in the Spokane area. In small meetings of no more than 30 at the maximum, we hope. You know, maybe I wish it would only be 12 at the most. But would rather go out on a particular weekend or week and go to 10 or 12 small groups of 10 people than just to one night of 100. You know. It means more time, but it means a better time because you can sit down with a small group and have a good evening. You know. And because this is what happens here, you know. We deal with small bunches and conversation, having fun. And that just doesn't fit with a group of 100, 200, 500 people like these banquets have become.
Well, because you don't get to talking to the individuals at all in these larger gatherings.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
You don't have the fellowship that you have in small groups.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And this at that point, of course, then isn't consistent with what we say we want to do or try to do here. You know, so why do something different there than what we do here? Then, you know, that's crazy. If we're just going and showing some pretty slides, you know, well, that's, you know, we can go any place. You might as well go to Glacier Park then. You know, you can go any place and see these mountains. It's nice that we have them here. We're glad to be here. But we don't have to be here.
I don't think I have any prettier ones.
Well, it's just, you know, Holden Village could be any place, and indeed it is any place that people are. It's nice that we're in the Cascades and we enjoy that, you know, but we could just as well be in Texas. In fact, in 2 years, we may well be in Texas. There's a possibility of having something going there. Maybe in the inner city of Chicago.
How about Southern California?
Would love it. So, you know, this is the thing, but I think there's a lot of possibilities, whether it's in our entire program at Holden or in the so-called retirement months, like from now until June, of doing things that Dunn says in here and more. I mean, because he's not bringing in at all the spiritual end of this business. And this is another point where I would have to, you know, criticize him, although he's limited because of the audience he was talking to and different things. So he may well feel this way, I don't know. But I think it's a growing concept, something like Holden, and the things that he's talking about too, across all ages. Industries are beginning to find out that it pays for them to send their men, their office personnel or whatever, away for a weekend or a week and pay them full wage. Pay their upkeep for that week. Maybe have training sessions wherever they are, but at least live together. And they know that they can take that financial burden because it's going to pay off in the long run, that these men are going to come back to work with a cohesiveness and a unity, having lived together. All right, so industry knows that. And you know, or you have to believe, that industry isn't going to buy into anything that isn't going to pay off in the pocketbook. Well, I shouldn't make that accusation. There are many industries and corporations that are doing a lot of things. I shouldn't say that. They're doing a lot of things philanthropically for the health of their people. But add to that, then, the total person, spiritual involvement, having fun, some lectures and things to try to stimulate people and increase their appreciation of what is around them. Add to that these things, and then I think we have quite an exciting program.
I think it'd be a marvelous thing if this sort of a place could be in different places all over the United States. For what a great thing it would be.
There are quite a few now. Not there isn't anything exactly like Holden, and I guess that's good. But there are different ones, and they're called different things, and they have different bases. Some of them are without any religious emphasis at all, and so I guess I would question them at that point. But this thing is growing. There was talk at one time of Holden. Well, I shouldn't say Holden, because then it means that we're going to try to do everything that we do here someplace else, and that isn't true. There are basic underlying concepts that Holden is founded on, the Christian ministry. Diversity of ages and activities, moving people into things, being able to appreciate the life and the potential that they have in Christ. There are some bases, however, that can be applied in many ways. Well, one application was hopefully getting hold of some building in Minneapolis, or in some, say, any area, but at least the talk was at the time Minneapolis, because we do have a lot of support in that area. Getting hold of an old building, maybe an old mansion or something, and having there maybe a sauna, a room for ceramics or painting, maybe a small library, maybe enough of a restaurant facility so you can at least whip up one meal. I mean, you know, maybe not a menu choice, but at least you can have a meal served. And then selling the place per night to people. You know, you come in for $5 a night. And so that the place would be open to anybody, but especially in a city deal, because of the population, like in the area where we were thinking of, where it is predominantly young adult age. Hopefully we'd get everybody else in to get away from that problem. But it would be basically for that age. And so they, for $5, they could come in after work, take a sauna, have supper. Maybe you would have some person in to lead a discussion or something, if they wanted that. You know, all of these things, like it is here, you take and leave what you please. And that would be their evening, you see. Now, some of the same things we do here. Then during the day, to use the facility to the greatest extent, we'd open it up as well and have a luncheon. And here, probably for the most part, it would be retired people. And in this particular area of the city, the population is primarily young adult people working and retired people living in high-rises. Well, if we can get them out of the high-rise then for an afternoon of fun, you know, in fellowship together with the background of a Christian motivation, you know, then this could be a good thing. So this is a possibility. There are different forms, different applications of the same idea that speak to some of the same things that Dunn brings up, I think, of making it a local thing. You see, if Holden Village, if anything that happens here, whether to an individual or to a group, if it stops at the lake, you know, then we might as well burn the place down. You know, if it doesn't go back home to your neighborhood, to your church, you know, to your life back there, if your only release can be to get back to Holden, you know, maybe it's good to have to come have a place to come back to renew ourselves to a certain extent, you know. But if this can't be done back there in sharing and helping with other people, then I think we're lost. If this place becomes some utopia that way, you know, place to get to, you see, then it's no good. It has to go back to that neighborhood. And this is where I like the idea, like he talks about, of the neighborhood revitalizing, of your block, of your section of town, you know. And here, I guess, is where I, you know, meet with the government programs, where if they are in that type of thing, I would appreciate them more. This doesn't mean they're not good, you know. But I think we have to strengthen our areas of our towns and get away from, and in that way help combat some of the problems that he mentions of violence on the streets and this type of thing. Because if people know one another, they react differently with one another, if they at least know their name. It's nice.
I like that little plaque. Where did I see that? Going over the diamond, it said, build a bridge into the wall.
Yeah, building bridges. There, I know there's one right up here at the top of the stairs. There may be others around.
I read that somewhere.
Yeah, build bridges instead of walls. Yeah. Well, I don't know what time it is. It must be getting close to supper. Oh, good. I didn't think it was that late. Well, we better knock it off. Thank you very much.
Thank you.